David, whether you have a few weeks old puppy or a senior who's seen multiple decades, any dog person like me knows the most valuable thing in the world is spending time with your pet.
Yep.
The farmer's dog makes it easy to keep them healthy, which can give you more quality years with your lovely dog.
Yeah, well, I've heard Farmer's Dog makes and delivers fresh, healthy dog food. And, you know, that's what everyone's looking for. It's recommended by vets, nutritionally balanced. It's made from human-grade ingredients, safe, clean kitchens. All that stuff matters.
Yeah. I mean, you love your dog. Why get the lousy food for your dog? Farmer's Dog is the best. Traditional dry and wet dog food options are extremely processed.
Sometimes
they use
dogs...
much lower quality. Yeah.
you put it in their bowl and they go, what is this kibble? And they knock it away. What is this canned goo?
Oh, yeah. I've had our dog, yeah, look at the bowl and then kind of crank its neck up and look at me. And it was like, really?
They go, really? Why don't you go first? You want a bite of this? Slop?
And it makes that sound.
Here you go, dog.
So Farmer's Dog isn't just higher quality food. They also send the food pre-portioned specifically for your dog based on their unique nutritional needs. It makes it easy to help your dog reach and stay at their ideal weight, David, and which is one of the biggest indicators of a full, healthy life. A fresh diet has been found to have all sorts of benefits, David, from healthier coat and skin, better breath, if you want to kiss your dog, and even easier digestion and smaller and better poops.
Let's look at a clip. It doesn't matter if your dog's young or old, it's always the right time to invest in their health for more happy years with your dog. Get 50% off your first box at farmersdog.com/fly.
Let the Farmer's Dog know we sent you. Use your code or click podcast after you sign up for your first box.
We can bring in Shane Gillis because I was at the fight. I saw Dennis sat next to me just chirping the whole fight. Look at this guy. He looks like he's on the rotunda, Jane Fonda and Clute. He was making fun of the fighters, making fun of everyone in the audience, making fun of the girls behind us. He's so hilarious. No.
Well, you see, he doesn't get out with his friends as much like he used to or do stand-up around us. So when I was around him, yeah, he was just dropping incredibly funny
He's got
lines.
All built up. So Shane Gillis, who is our guest, great comic. I saw him there at the fight too, went over and said hi to him. He's a huge dude. I think I'm...
Yeah, he's like 6'4".
I don't think I'm that huge because everyone is seemingly extra huge. So anyway, he's a big dude. He's funny. I see him a lot on Instagram.
Yeah.
I follow him. I see his clips. Very edgy. Was on SNL for the shortest amount of time of any cast member, probably.
What do you mean? I don't remember that part.
I think he was on for a day.
No, he has a very interesting story. And we, you know, I like to say now, break it down. We break down his adventure into being hired on Saturday Night Live and then essentially let go. And the emotion around that and the circumstances around that. So it's a compelling story. It's a unique podcast. And he is one of the best stand-ups out there now.
Filling up huge arenas, getting big bucks. I don't want to say the story was a roller coaster, but it was.
I'm going to say something. There was actual real emotion. There were laughs, but there was real emotion on the podcast we did with Shane Gillis. Shane Gillis.
Gillis?
Shane, is it Gillis or Willis?
Yeah, it's Gillis, but you're kind of putting a little...
Gillis? Okay, sorry.
No, all it's right. Good. It's just your interpretation. Okay, well, Shane, here's Shane, and enjoy.
Enjoy.
Look at Spade. I look like I'm from Yellowstone.
That's not Kevin Costner?
Well, it's me, dude.
God, Costner.
Shane, are you on, guy?
Yeah, what's going on?
He was waiting for us to quiet down.
We just talk about anything. Thanks for being here with us.
Yeah, thanks, buddy.
Thank you guys for having me.
Spade gets really, really boring really fast.
Fucking so fast. He's heard.
That's a joke.
No, Dana, you know, I know a lot of guys that know Shane well. I don't know him well. I don't really know him. But all my funny friends think Shane is great. And stuff I've seen is really good. And so it's fun to have you here. And
hey, man.
Bunch of stupid shit.
I've my sons told me over time, they said, you got to see this guy, Bill Burr. It's like 10 years ago or whatever. Then they go, you got to see this guy, Theo Vaughn. And then they said, you, and brought your special on, especially the one you did in the little club in Austin.
Yeah.
Which is pretty brilliant. I mean, it's got 8 million views. I think our listeners should understand this new idea of homemade show business where you don't have a corporate master and you're just doing stuff off the grid and you create this empire. It didn't exist. When I came through, it was Johnny Carson or an NBC guy for a sitcom. Now it's like the Wild West. So you're one of those people, I think, who'll do whatever you want, or you could go back in, on SNL. I've talked to Lauren last night.
It's all good, yeah.
I think it's a passage of time. It's that thing of like, you know, we looked this special and we could really use like that kind of voice, you know.
Yeah. He's not going to let it go. He wants to prove he was right.
Well, yeah, you had your, well, we're just getting all your greatest hits right now. Gilly and Keith. So you've been doing sketch comedy online too, which is incredibly funny. ISIS, Toyota, and Trump speed dating. I didn't know you were an impressionist, but your Trump is very cool. It's really good.
Oh, thanks, man. This is a good, I like this podcast, man. Yeah, this is good.
It's only 6 minutes today, yeah, so.
And you don't have to talk until the last 2 minutes.
We usually right. just talk, we self-congratulate, talk about our guest for 20 minutes. We compliment you, and then we tap out, and we play music. But anyway, how are you? That's all I had to say. For now.
I'm good. Things are good. When I'm done with this, I'm in New York right now. I got to drive to Philly tonight. And then I'm from Harrisburg, Pennsylvania. I got to drive home.
Dude, he went to West Point, Dana.
I know. That's the thing. I saw in one of the comments, what's great about Shane is he's got 30 points of IQ that he's not letting the audience in on.
I went to West Point for about 3 weeks. So don't, I quit right away.
Well, what was it that I read about? Was it a football scholarship or were you like 4.2? West Point's not easy, is it? I mean, to get into?
No, it's easier when you're playing football, which is what I was doing. But it's, everybody there is on scholarship. There's no, you don't pay tuition at West Point. I got recruited to play football.
So could I ask what your position was and what your size was?
I played offensive line. I was about 6'3", 295, 300.
You're about 6'1 now?
Yeah. 6'1", 300.
Wait a minute. You're walking around the planet at 6'3", 295.
Shit. Yeah.
What did that feel like? Because you don't look, you look husky, but you're not.
I didn't know you were that tall either. Yeah, you seem, that's a monster.
Yeah, it hurts physically. It hurts to be that big, dude.
Well, it's like, even though you hold the mic, you're so tall, you have to kind of lean down to it, right? You feel like, even though you could bring it up, you still have to get down to it, kind of, right? It's sort of a stylistic thing, but it's very...
Him and Kevin Nealon have to get down to the mic, even if they're holding it. They just show how tall they are.
It's too tall. But anyway, so that's a fascinating. I've never met a comedian who was, an offensive lineman at 295. And then it's like pretty much one of the best guys doing stand-up right now. That's an amazing. And you started in 2012, which seems like yesterday. Like my first set was in 1976.
Gross.
Not only could I be your dad, I could be your grandfather. I love the stuff you do about your dad screaming at the TV and all that stuff. It's really,
Thank
you. Yeah.
So you start, well, let's just get out of the way this SNL horse shit because people tune out at minute 3 on us, we've found through studies.
We've been talking about the metrics.
Yeah, so they're already gone. So now so we can talk about it.
We can get that behind us.
Yeah. So you were on SNL. Yeah.
You were on now, it.
Let's go really far back, Dana. You were born. And then fast forward to you got a call from Lauren.
Well, Shane was on SNL. That's all I know. I didn't read any further. I just want to know some of the sketches or what happened. That's great. So how was your time there as a cast member?
It was good. I went into the office twice.
Did you really go in?
Yeah. Well, I mean, counting the auditions, I went in maybe twice. Yeah. Not to meet anybody, just literally like damage control, like sitting there with Lauren. Talking about it, yeah.
Shane, when you leave here, you won't be coming back.
He thought it was going. He was like, no, we're going to get past this. And I was sitting there like, there's no way. There's no way.
Oh, he actually took that tack. That's interesting that maybe he thought it would, he's obviously in a controversial business of comedy. And that show has always gotten in trouble. So that's sort of interesting about your story is that what does it take in this day and age to go too far in that, in their eyes. And I guess you did, but and you know, that's the opinion. But two things that are interesting. You bounce back, which is hard to do, and that's why, like Dana says, you're a sort of a self-made guy doing this other way, because that was sort of your only channel now.
I didn't do that by choice. I would have much rather had people set things up for me.
Yeah, exactly.
It would have been nice. It would have been very nice.
But you feel a little better right now because the special was so well received. I mean, because that was your biggest mic drop and your sketch show. So you're in a different place than when you walked out of the 17th floor. You've really landed on your feet. The only thing I want to delineate, I may be getting canceled, but I didn't really get a sense of what you said, other than like throughout my time on the planet doing comedy, or even with my friends, I would do impressions of racist people, but I was not the racist. It's like Harvey Korman. If you take him at his word in, you know, Blazing Saddles, have you seen Blazing Saddles? Yeah. So he says the N word probably 800 times. So he may be technically the most racist human being in history if context doesn't matter, just by saying it. So I don't know why he's not canceled posthumously. Anyway, that's all I have to say.
Yeah, I mean, I could have done the impression a little better. You know, make it a little more obvious it was an impression, but yeah, I don't know.
Right. I just thought you were doing a white racist guy. Being very, I mean, just That was my impression of your impression. Yeah,
I was doing an impression of myself.
Yeah. Well, in comedy, it's dicey because once you're on that stage, it's almost anything goes because it's all under the umbrella of comedy, and that's not the way it goes anymore. I'd like to see. So you're doing sketches. How do you get in front of Lorne, or who hears that you're good enough to even audition? How does that go?
I think they saw me doing stand-up at JFL or Clusterfest, which is a Comedy Central thing.
Okay.
So I did New Faces at Just for Laughs in Montreal. And I guess SNL people were there and saw me and liked it and asked me to audition. Actually, they asked me to write first, and I didn't submit a packet because I didn't want to, you know, I don't want to be a writer.
Can I just ask, wow, okay, how did you get that good that fast? Because that's like 2019 they saw you, and you started in 2012. So
yeah,
that's like hardly beginning in some ways. But so you got really good really fast. So you just took to it. You were like in your early 20s?
Yeah, I just did it every day.
And did you write every day? Did you listen, record, listen, and write? Or you just got up every day and kind of...
Yeah, honestly, that's where podcasting really helps, is me and my friend just joked around every week for a couple hours. And that's, you know, you're just sitting there riffing and you're like, all right, that could work. And then you go to an open mic that night. You're like, all right, that works.
And you're early in on podcasting too. So you're way ahead of the game on that. And does that get you enough of a base? Because podcasting is obviously bigger now. Dane and I have been assigned to do this one. And so through jury duty, yeah, we get points for this on my Amex card. So so you do that, and then it gets you enough of a bubbling audience to
go to Just for Laughs. What was your first big one? Yeah, Montreal, the Just for Laughs. Was that a big deal at the time to be asked?
Oh yeah. Yeah. Okay. I wanted New Faces very bad. Yeah.
And that really, really launches people, that show, if you kill.
Yeah.
And some it doesn't, which is worse, right? They go and then nothing happens.
Well, they book a lot of people that aren't good. So if you're like, I'd been doing stand-up for 10 years when they booked me. So it was like some of those people that they book for New Faces are like literally like 2 years in. Some of them are like 20 years old.
It's like
30.
Open mic faces.
Yeah, it really is.
Yeah, if you're not Eddie Murphy or something, it's a disfavor when they put people on when they're not ready. Yeah.
Well, Shane, when I did just to keep interrupting you, when I did HBO, you had a young comedian special. HBO Young Comedians, hosted by Dennis Miller, who was one of my favorites at the time. So they do that, and that was sort of the only game in town, but on TV, it was sort of equivalent to what you're saying. And they had like the young comedians, but you know, I always joke, it's like Richard Belzer and people. And I'm like, wait, I'm actually a young comedian. Can I be on this? And I was on that borderline of having a pretty good 8 to 10 to 12 minutes, but not much more, but at least that was pretty polished to get me on. And then after that, you got to sort of go. But that was six of us, Rob Schneider, Drake Say, there's people on there. So that helped me the way that that JFL thing is for you. And that's where SNL saw me. And so you get this break. And then the talks start happening. Oh, did you have an agent and everything at this point?
Yes, I did have an agent. I was with UTA.
Oh, yeah. Big one, yeah.
Yeah, and then they dropped me during the
I was about to say, God damn it, did they drop you?
Wait a minute.
Cowards. Those cowards.
A corporation got nervous and actually let you go?
Man. Hey, you wanna know something funny? They kept Jussie Smollett for a very, very long time.
Oh, too long.
Wow.
Yeah, they kept him until like this year, yeah.
This year. Yeah. Oh, we feel like they
Wow. But they actually had the noose. Funny? He gave him the noose as sort of a souvenir and they had it in the lobby of UTA.
Damn.
What, we can't do that? What was a fake noose? I think I'm canceled every day, but I feel like I'm too irrelevant and too from the 60s to get
your
canceled.
Your special is called Too Old to Cancel.
You can't cancel me. Life is canceling me.
Yeah.
If I was a fuel reaper. If I was a fuel gauge, I'd be less than a quarter tank. I'd be like an eighth of a tank if my lifespan was a fuel gauge.
It would be like this. Bung, 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 bung.
Yeah, and I'd just be just cutting down as I got into the gas station. But anyway, so you blow up. Do you remember how? What were you feeling then? Like it seemed like you were on a rocket ship in a way.
Oh,
you kill it just for laughs.
No, it wasn't a rocket. I was
well, you killed in Montreal. That's what I heard. Anyway.
Yes, that was good. Yes, I did well there. And then, yeah, I mean, it wasn't like crazy. I just started like headlining. But then, yes, there was a lot of offers quick, including SNL was like right away. SNL was
okay.
SNL was like, we want you to, they sent me a writer's packet. I didn't do it. But then they were like, they asked me to audition and they were like straight to main stage audition.
So 8-4 right on the tongue where they do the,
right where the monologue. Yeah. Monologue.
Right, Dana, where they, yeah, the monologue is. Yeah.
And there's 20 people in the audience. Go ahead.
Yeah. It was one of those things where I was like, I'm never going to get this. SNL, they're not going to, you know, I'm not that type of guy right now where SNL is. And I figured there's no chance. And I was like, I was not nervous. I was sitting in the green room. You know how they make you wait for like 2 hours, I guess to kind of like rattle you. I literally didn't care.
Lauren, I think does. I've never talked to him about it, but I do think he likes to kind of rattle people around that situation. Just to see if they can handle when the red light goes on without, shitting themselves. So you go on, you're so loose because you don't give shit. You think
I thought I didn't care until you walk through that tunnel and you see the stage. And then I was like, oh, fuck. Like, oh, this is it. And as soon as I was so nervous, the mic was shaking. So I had to like put it against my chin to do the set.
I've gotten a shaky hand before. It's tough.
It's embarrassing.
It catches you off guard. You're like, am I shaking?
Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
You hold it with both hands then maybe, right?
True.
No.
No, that makes sense. I should have.
Could you see Lauren's face when you were up there?
Yeah, but just kind of a shadow, yes.
Sometimes Dana
smoke coming up like
yeah.
Dana, when I was there, he holds a flashlight under his chin in the dark.
and makes sounds like show. So then you thought, what did you think when you got off?
Did you do Trump?
I don't think I did do a Trump impression. I could be wrong. I did a joke about Trump that it's funny. The joke at the time was like, it's funny to watch every comedian go on and make fun of Trump. And it's like, they're lucky he's not here. He would bury all these comedians, including me. I like do it. Oh, yeah. You know what I did? I did do a Trump because the rest of that joke is him following me and calling me a fat loser and how he would definitely be.
Go ahead. I want to hear it.
What a loser, that guy. Very fat.
Very fat.
Very fat. You know, I saw that a bit, and it was like a shooting gallery when he went up against the other Republicans. And it was extraordinary. Sleepy or low energy.
Yeah,
little Sleepy Marco. Joe caught on too. That was hot.
He's got a new one right now for Ron DeSanctimonious.
I know. And what do you think of that? I don't
a
think
little
it's as
bumpy, but I'm getting
I'm
back
not sure
it.
If I get sanctimony from DeSantis. I'm not sure know. If it just, you know, it rhymes, you know, it's so you got the D and the E and you just continue it. You know what you got. But I don't know if that's the best nickname.
It's not his best work. But it's good, though, that he's still trying.
I mean, no matter what any nickname he gives somebody is funny because it's coming from him. I mean, Sleepy's not the best nickname. It's just funny that he's out there making fun of other politicians.
Of course. Little Rocket Man was ballsy.
Little Rocket Man.
Tiny rockets. Little tiny rockets.
Tiny hands.
But you do a
rudest.
Great one. And you have the build. I mean, you look, I'm not saying you look like him, but you look more. I mean, I'm such a pencil neck. You could put me in anything, but you actually, you know, it was a cool look you had on the sketch show.
My favorite one was... Mini Mike Bloomberg. He literally ended Bloomberg. Bloomberg
forgot about
they ended that. They ended the campaign. He called him Mini Mike, and they were like, "All right, we're done." They put $1 billion into the campaign. He called him Mini Mike, and they're like, "All
it's
right,
over." All it took was the word Mini and Mike, and $1 billion went away. That's
it just
hysterical.
Makes you sound like the biggest asshole. He doesn't even put it through a computer. He just says it, and you're like, "Yeah, we ran 100, and that's the best one."
Well,
the best
what do you,
one to make you feel like an asshole.
If you were running against him and you knew he was going to come at you, I mean, how could you advise DeSantis? Like, ignore it, come back at it, or, you know.
If I was DeSantis, I'd say Humpty Trumpty had a big fall.
Daffy Donald.
Yeah,
I thought.
you can't combat it unless it's authentic, because some of those other guys tried to do it and it just,
I know. Oh, it was humiliating.
It's so bad.
Rubio tried to go after his hands.
Yeah,
little hands. It looked terrible.
All it did was give Trump an alley-oop to go on a debate and say he had a big dick.
Yeah, it's true.
Just made it funny.
Let me tell you, there's no problem down there, right? There's no problem. And he pointed to his cock. There's no problem. It's still the most exotic political creature in the history of probably the 2,000 years. I don't know about, you know.
He's up there with open micers. It's impossible. He's like a seasoned headliner.
Oh, if you put him in a hip-hop rap competition, I mean, Eminem would have trouble. Everyone would be in trouble.
The only way to beat him is you got to be Biden. You got to just have no clue what he's saying. Just totally... Just totally be unfazed. You can't get your feelings hurt. You're just up there talking.
Well, I have a theory, Shane, that when he went to the first debate, I think he had a UFC fighter with him on the plane. And I think he got really amped up, Trump. So what you would have been smarter for him to do would be let Biden talk, but he wouldn't let him talk. And that kind of made Biden look really good.
Yeah,
I remember that first debate. Trump looked awful,
hyperbolic, and then Biden didn't have to really complete a sentence. He just could go, look at this guy, come on, what do you say? It's a people size as Pirates of the Caribbean.
And now for a word from our sponsors at Betterment. Let's talk about hustle culture. You know, the whole rise and grind, go big or go home thing. It's a lifestyle that may not be for you, but one that your money can handle thanks to Betterment. Betterment is the automated investing and savings app that makes your money hustle. How? Their automated technology optimizes your investments again and again. With Betterment, your money is taking ice baths at 5 a.m. while you get your well-deserved rest. Your money downs protein smoothies and automatically reinvests your dividends all before you head out the door. Your money's a workaholic, but you don't have to be because you've got Betterment, the automated investing and savings app that makes your money hustle. Visit Betterment.com to get started. Investing involves risk. Performance is not guaranteed. Oh, let's go back. Let's go back, Dana. So he goes, does audition.
Let's digress.
No real impressions.
Yeah.
Nervous.
A little bit of Trump.
Mic on chin. You do probably 8 minutes. I don't know how long you do.
Yeah, I think it was only like 5.
Okay. Smattering of applause, I'm guessing. Thank you.
Actually, they were laughing the whole time.
Oh, great.
So it was in my head that I was nervous because I ran into Michael Che that night at a club and he was like, he was like, you killed it. And I was like, oh, I thought I was nervous. He was like, least nervous one by far.
Oh, cool.
Even though I was in my head. I mean, my hand probably wasn't that bad.
But that's the beginning of the psychology, Dana, of like, oh, wait, is there a chance I might get this fucking job?
Yeah, it's exactly right away. I got done. Yeah, when I got done, I was like, oh, I fucking bombed. No chance. Huh. And then that night I ran into Che and he was like, no, you did great. And I was like, oh, shit. I'm going to fucking get this. And then I started to get like a little, I don't know. I was never like happy.
Yeah. Like, oh, no. Oh, no. You wouldn't be happy. He says sense of dread, right? That's what when I first got it, I felt sick to my stomach and dreadful. Like maybe I'll bomb on the show. Or what was your vibe? What was your like dread or just anxiety?
Yeah, I think dread and anxiety is exactly what it was. Like everybody else was like, oh, you must have been so happy. I was like, I mean, the only cool part was I got to call my parents and tell them. That was the first thing in comedy they have understood.
Yeah.
You know, but other than that, it was like I was, kind of fucking knew something bad was coming. Sure enough.
Now, what's the time frame now? Do they hire you the next day? Do they make an offer?
It was quick. They were talking. It was probably end of August. I took an audition. September 12th is when they announced it.
Okay.
So
they announce you're on the new something feature player.
New feature player. And literally within 5 hours.
Whoa.
Right away.
Damn.
And it was funny. This is the funniest part. I was on my way to do stand-up. So I was on the train in New York. My agent calls and was like, did you say the word I said? And I was like, no, I would never say that. And then I hit a train stop. Or in between stops, I lose service. And then the next text I get once the train starts again is a video of me saying it. I'm like, oh, shit. And then I'm like, oh, it'll be all right. It'll be all right. And then the next stop is like, you know, CNN. It's like, oh, shit.
Oh, boy. Next stop. Yeah. Yeah. Well, maybe I, in passing, a little utterance.
It literally was just a video of my face, like not even smiling, just saying it. I was like, oh, shit.
No context, nothing. Yes. This is public enemy number one.
Damn. Yeah. Well, hopefully they have a new protocol, like vet. If you have a problem with someone, don't let them audition. You know, this was a mistake. I don't know who vets people and who's the decider. But
well, here, that's another thing is like they did vet like the same way everybody else was like an improv person. They didn't have podcasts at the time. They just checked my Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter.
No one vets like Twitter people.
Yeah,
like they're like this guy. We'll figure it out. Give us 5 hours.
Yeah, they got me with the podcast though. Is like nobody's gonna sit down and listen to 1,000 hours,
right?
It's tough to vet the podcast. I told them, I was like, I have a podcast and I say the word gay on it a lot. And they're like, yeah, that's fine. I omitted that one.
So you guys actually literally had 1,000 hours of that podcast or hundreds of hours? It was massive.
Yeah.
And so how many times did you use that slur?
I don't know. Before that video, I would have said zero. But then there's been a couple.
Oh, boy. Yeah. Well, you know, some of these sketches you do, like I saw ISIS, Toyota, are these done before? Or were you saying some of your apprehension with SNL is maybe your sketches, when you went there to write or be in, you might write something that's even too far for them. So is that part of your fear? Like it might be like, they might not like, I'm not saying you're a horrible person. I'm just saying some people like to push it and some people do different things.
No, that wasn't my apprehension at all. It was like, I don't know. Maybe it's just a me thing. It was something good happening.
Yeah.
I was kind of like, oh,
it's like, don't wish too hard. Then you get something. You don't really probably wish for SNL, but like Dana was always that type of character guy that's like the perfect spot for him. With me, it wasn't quite as perfect, but
I bombed out twice. I auditioned for it and I had no confidence at all that I could be on it. Later it's like, it was a obvious pick, but no. What I'm curious about on a human level, because when I got Blue Thunder with James Farentino, a TV show in 1984, I called my parents. It is sort of a thing that you kind of do, even though I had issues with my dad. Were you the one to have to call them the second time? And what did that feel like?
No, the news.
The news got it. So then they called you.
Yeah.
Shaming.
Everyone called and was like, are you all right? Are you all right? I was like, yeah, I'm all right. I was actually, I wasn't even like that. I mean, I kind of blacked it out a little. It was like so much, but yeah, I wasn't like, I don't think I was like devastated. I was kind of just
numb. Out of it.
I don't know. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
I knew I could,
you're inside
I knew I
a dream.
Do stand up.
Your rocket almost didn't get off the launching pad. That's the thing. You weren't way out in space falling. You were like,
yeah.
Yeah.
No, I mean, I had zero. Yeah. I didn't lose anything. I had $0. Mm-hmm. I lost an opportunity, but it was all of a sudden I just had a lot of attention on me, which was weird. It was uncomfortable.
You know, Dana, I wonder if it comes down to like, I know these are corporations. I know Lauren has a good sense of humor, and I know, you know, Dana himself, there's been sketches in the past that aren't, that wouldn't fly today, of course.
Oh, yeah. That's just I did an Asian character in the 80s. I was called out for it being inappropriate, you know? So,
it's tough.
What was the accent?
Oh, a full Asian. I lived near Chinatown.
No, just do it real quick.
I will. I lived in Chinatown, just a context, or near it in San Francisco. And I used to see this guy in his yard, Chinese gentleman, with a leash on a chicken. Yeah. So then I had a flight of fancy of a character from China who opens a pet chicken store, maybe in Manhattan, but he loves the chickens so much that he talks people out of buying them. So it wasn't any sort of stereotypical thing. It was like, so Lovitz came in and go, how much for this chicken? And I would say, oh, you don't want that chicken. That chicken, he think he like dog, but he not dog. You throw frisbee, he don't even catch it. He poke hole in it. 1 minute you got frisbee, next minute you got spaghetti strainer. Because chicken make a lousy house pet. So there it was.
The catchphrase,
and then I would sing to My Fair Lady that people would leave, and I go across them to his beak, and that ran three times, and then Candace Bergen came on as a customer, and she told me that I was a racial stereotype, and that's how that was the last one we did. We made fun, or we acknowledged it.
But yeah.
For me coming in, we go by Bill Burr was on our show, and he just said, "What's your intent? Is your intent to hurt?" To me, it was naivete. I wouldn't even understand that being offensive in 1986, 87. And neither did anyone in the show. Nobody. Nobody flagged it or talked about it. So, but now we're in 2022. And I do think that if people see you and listen to you on this and see your special, see your stuff, it has its own edge to it. But you're a very likable gentleman, you know, because they make you into this boogeyman character. And the more we see you, we meaning the public at large, like here's a guy who's goofing around on a podcast for 1,000 hours with a friend saying outrageous things. And we've all done that in the back of a car with our comedian friends after a gig. Yeah. How else do you make a comedian laugh without certain words that
going too far? Yeah.
And you know you are, but you're not doing it. You're just doing it because of the shock value. You don't take it into your heart. End of statement. I talked.
By the way, Shane doesn't ever agree that he's funny and he's humble. You know, he doesn't. We keep telling him and he's never like, I knew I was really good when he seems to take it all in. Like we all know this business is very fickle and who's to say who's actually really funny. It's just, you just cross your fingers. And if people keep coming to the shows, it's great. If they watch your special, it's great. And you know, it could be rug pulled any day. You just don't know. It's very tough. It's tough to be cocky.
Yeah. You'd have to be a real dumbass.
Yeah. I mean, I hear you on Rogan a lot. Now, when you go on Rogan a lot, I think you do.
I
think it's cool that Joe has this huge place and he still invites all his buddies on and they just laugh. And I think it just sounds like fun. And that always probably unintentionally gives you a bump somewhere either.
Oh, it's huge. It's huge.
Yeah. Rogan's show.
Yeah. And it's also, I think, you know, I don't want to speak for him, but I think it's good for him. Like he needs it too. He needs to like,
well, it's fun.
He's huge. He's might be the most, he can't go outside.
Well, he's the number one show kind of in the world. I mean, it's 70 million people.
Forget podcasts. It's just show.
He's bigger. Yeah. Bigger than any television show, bigger than most movies as far as that audience. And so you're a regular on that. So yeah, I guess your club dates just lines around the block.
Yeah. It's very good.
That's awesome.
But yeah, I think Rogan, I think, I mean, he always has his friends on. He always keeps his friends around. Like he's, Yeah, it probably keeps him sane.
I'm sure it does. Sandler's like that. Sandler's pretty big up there. And, you know, yeah, he just did a tour and he's like, can you come out for a week and just come on stage or come at the beginning and then we'll sing a song together, just because it's probably not quite as fun as it used to be in a weird way. And Rogan is, there must be so much responsibility in a weird way that he suddenly has, you know, that he didn't even want. And now he has all these interesting people on. And then he has interesting comics. You guys all come on and bullshit. It's just fun for him and the audience, I would imagine.
Yeah. I knew. Wait, where were you? You were just with Sandler, right?
I just went out. Yeah, we just did some in the Southeast.
I was with Adam Egan. I was with Adam Egan.
Oh, yeah, He told me you were doing
drunk. We were drunk. And I was like, text Sandler, dude, do it, do it. That'll be cool. And he texted me, he said, it. Spade's on stage.
And he said, I'm fucking bombing, I'm sure.
Yeah, he was talking shit.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah, it's a little quiet in there.
No, it is fun.
In the arena.
It's fun. Schneider was there. I think Apatow did a few. I think Conan's doing a few. He just, Swartzen.
I just met him. Swartzen came to my show in, I was in Florida.
Yeah, don't buy his bullshit.
Just met him for the first time. He's wild.
Yeah, he's funny. Yeah, he's a great dude. So we all sort of are in that sort of world too. So, you know, that's fun. It's all fun with the comedian buddies and that's great. You have a place to go screw off. I mean, now you still do, you obviously do stand up. And what are your thoughts about, like, Theo is big. Theo and I are writing a movie and he's big on, why don't we just put it on YouTube? I'm like, I think what we're finding is a special is easier because you're only you, you know? And when you're a movie, there's guild problems and there's everyone needs to get paid a certain amount. And then just the idea of fun, throw it on YouTube. It got very complicated very fast. So
yeah,
we might go more conventional way, but I do like the idea of what you're doing and things like that, because your special, was it Cave in the Creek? What's it called?
Yeah, it's at the Creek in the Cave. It was just live in Austin.
Yeah, pretty lo-fi.
Yeah.
Show a few people coming in, getting a couple 7 and 7s and sit down and have a drink, and you just come out in a t-shirt and,
I love
Dana
that.
Wishes he did that, right?
Well, I've done 3 shitty specials, and hold your applause, only because you're working out in the clubs, and I usually do little characters and sketches. I'm in a little club, and I'm just on this roll and the rhythm and everything. And then you go in the big room, and the air conditioner breaks the first night, so they can't use it. And then the second night, there's like 9 cameras. So then because they have all those angles, you're like watching a special, bam, as if you're a flying seat. You'd fly into the guy's face. Then you go way to the back. You're like whipped around. And it just soaks all the funniness out of it. So when I saw yours, I'm like, okay, this is organically shot, so clean, so simple.
Just like you're sitting in a club watching this.
And you're laughing your ass off with it. There's no remix. You don't even hear the audience that much. You see them a little bit, but you're killing. So I think that's just the way stand-up should be done. But of course, people want you to play arenas because then you'll be booked in arenas and old Jed's a millionaire. But yeah, that had a magic to it. Of a guy showing up just at a club in Austin. And that's my
special. You're also fighting your way back. And you know, the audience sometimes is aware of cameras. It's nothing like the night before when you killed a club and you're practicing for it. Then you come in and it's lit and they're like, those are camera seats. No one can sit there. And then there's a fucking jib going to swing in front of them. And people like, how do I act? I'm in the audience. What if they show me? I had masks in mind. Everyone had a fucking mask. And I was like, oh, I didn't even know it.
Oh.
And I'm like, God, because my opener was on and he was doing okay. And I go, oh, don't give me a tough crowd tonight. And when he got off, he goes, oh, they all have N95s. I go, oh my God, that's right.
That's fucking terrible.
I know. And all the cameras, the trucks are there. You don't get another shot at it.
That's terrible.
I know. And Sandler did like 200 shows. You know, not 200, but we were filming when Sandler was doing his special. We were just filming each night because he has the means. He just took the money he got and put it right in the special and said, I'll film this night. I'll film that night. I'm going to go in the alley and shoot a piece there. I'm going to go to a tiny club. And then it just really fun because it's a whole like thought out. It's like a big show. You know, that's different.
And he doesn't know he's shooting a special. like when I was doing it behind my eyes and I'll see people, I can tell that they know they're shooting their special. So there's that little bit of tension in the eyes. But Adam did so many nights that he's just fucking around. But did you shoot more than one night at that club?
No, that was one. That was basically, that was two shows one night. Yeah.
That, for the people at home, that's the standard. Two shows one night. First one's usually not as good, and then they say it's good, and then the second one you actually do good, and then they go, we'll use all that.
But it's like, you know, your next one, if you went to a bigger room and you went with Netflix, would be like, are you ready to rock? Well, are you getting that now?
Yeah, that's the thing right now. I'm about to do a theater tour coming up, and it's like, I think I want to record the next special I do. I want to do in a club again. I don't know. I mean, I'm just not used to theaters at all. I've never, you know, so maybe I'll like them, but right now, a club,
Reality TV has hit a new high on Hulu from executive producer Jimmy Kimmel. The all-new Hulu original series, High Hopes, is finally here for your viewing pleasure.
The Hulu original reality series follows two budding entrepreneur brothers and their hilarious half-baked employees at one of the fastest-growing cannabis dispensaries in Hollywood. This workplace comedy showcases the highs and even more highs of the competitive marijuana industry.
More than just coworkers, the owners and bud tenders in High Hopes are one dope family.
You'll fall in love with these quirky characters as they pursue career aspirations, love, and fame, all under a slightly hazy cloud.
All episodes of the new reality series High Hopes are now streaming only on Hulu.
¿Qué
pasa? ¿Qué pasa?
Is that what they say when you walk into sushi?
I think that's what's happening in Spanish. ¿Qué pasa? ¿Qué pasa? David Ospero.
I had a difficulty learning German in high school. It's a very tough language. I did it through textbooks and a teacher. I would have rather had Rosetta Stone.
You know, you not being able to learn German is very, very interesting.
But stupid. Now, Rosetta Stone is the most trusted language learning program. We know this. Available on desktop as an app. Truly immerses you in the language you want to learn.
Yeah, this is planning a trip to Italy. And I think Rosetta Stone is my ticket to speak a better language.
Hey,
I want a pizza pie. But I'll be saying it in Italian. Hey, I want a pizza pie. Sounds like
that's better
English, but it's still that was.
They
Italian.
Say, do you want to sound perfectly fluent, or do you want to sound like Ratatouille?
Honestly, trusted experts for 30 years, David, with millions of users and 25 languages offered. You want to hear some?
Yeah, the
Spanish,
big ones.
Spanish, French, Italiano, Sturman, Korean, Chinese, Javanese,
careful,
Dutch, Arabic, Polish.
Fast language acquisitions. Rosetta Stone.
Should I read that straight?
It immerses you in many ways. No English translation, so you really learn to speak, listen, and you think in the language, Dana. That's the hard part.
No, I do like their process. The intuitive process picks up a language naturally, first with words, then phrases, then sentences. It's designed for long-term retention, David, because we all took Spanish in high school, and all we can say is donde está la biblioteca.
Yeah.
I can find a library, but nothing else. Rosetta Stone is a game changer.
It's like having
David.
A personal trainer for your accent. It's convenient. We said the desktop, the app options, audio companion. You can do it offline. It's amazing value. Lifetime membership has all 25 languages. For any and all trips and language needs in life, that's lifetime access to 25 language courses Rosetta Stone offers for 50% off. That is a steal. I'll say that in English, a steal.
Don't put off learning that language. There's no better time than right now to get started. For a very limited time, Fly on the Wall listeners can get Rosetta Stone's lifetime membership for 50% off.
Visit rosettastone.com/fly. That's 50% off unlimited access to 25 language courses for the rest of your life. Redeem your 50% off at rosettastone.com/fly today. I'm on a theater tour now, and it's tough. It's not, my theater tour is like 2,000 to 2,500, so it's not as big as these guys you hear about. And I've never done theater, I haven't even thought about it, but I go, everyone's doing it. Nate, Theo, all these guys. So I go, let me try it. And it's a different vibe, you know, it's a, not a pace, but you feel way more responsible. There's a weird feeling of nervousness. Yeah. Like they're paying more, they're staring. This is more of a big night out.
There's and no then, waitress. There's no drink. They're just
there's
like,
four balconies. Yeah. You don't know if they're drinking or what. And it, you go, you're walking through the back and it's yeah. like all cement. Like you're at a show, like.
Stay like in small going, club, yeah. Shane. Yeah. Just stay
it's
in
hard,
small.
But no. you make money.
Yeah.
Look at Nate Bergazzi. Just keeps going bigger and bigger. And he's funny, Dana, because he's the opposite. He's like, I'm everyone's mom's favorite comedian.
Yeah.
That's his moniker because he's clean. Very hard to be clean and funny, and he's great at it.
He's, I just saw him in Vegas recently. He's, his new hour is, it's incredible. He's
so good. I can't
so
believe.
Good.
Yeah. He's smart. He gets the TikToks
also,
out there.
I didn't realize, I was just looking at my image on this. I didn't realize I had a bunch of religious.
Yeah. I mean,
yeah, my bad on that. That's, this is my,
you've got like a fucking
are you, are
beaver.
Are you at your home? Are your parents?
It's my apartment.
Oh, your
yeah,
apartment.
My apartment.
Okay. So are you very religious?
My girlfriend.
Which is fine.
No, this is.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Who's that guy in that painting? What's happening there?
That's actually mine. That's sick. That's Father, that's Father Corby. That's, he's blessing the Irish Brigade at the Battle of Gettysburg.
Ooh.
Oh,
sick. And
I'm
then he
Irish.
The, he became yeah. the president of Notre Dame. I like Notre Dame football.
Wow.
Good stuff, guys. That's podcasting.
Jesus Christ. This,
could I this. Could I make a comment about your skills, yeah. your skill set, since we talked about that other guy, Gabe Bergazzi, what's his name? No, sorry, he's great.
Nate.
I know. Nate, you, I've been compared to Louis. I think it's because you are able to land
fat.
Really, no, really. Louis stock and trade is he landed so many bits that were so sensitive and he made them so funny. Chris Rock has done it, but you did one on your sister's addiction toward the end of this special and one on yeah. special coaching Special Olympics kids. Really tricky topics. But you brilliantly landed them so hard. The audience was, when you land something like that, that's the audience seems to laugh so hard, like harder than normal, especially yeah. the Special Olympics stuff at the end with the Hooters thing. It's just like, yeah. you know, it's just very difficult. I mean, do you have to vet those? Like you keep working on where the line is to keep them engaged
yeah.
and stuff? Go
For
ahead.
Sure. Yeah. For sure. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, you guys know, yeah, you start, you have an idea like that. You try it. People are, you do it in open mic. People are like, oh my God.
Yeah. Cause you do it wrong a few times.
Yeah. They're like, never do that again. You're like, I know it's funny. I know it's funny. I'm going to keep it. But then there's, you know, there's ones where people are like, never do that again. You're like, I know it's funny. And it's just never funny.
And you can't find a way. Well, really?
Keep doing it.
Yeah, there are certain topics that are a little tough, you know.
Yeah.
That
I feel weird because I can't do, like, I'm the worst case scenario. Like, I'm white, supposedly rich, I'm male, and I'm old. It's like every complaint is coming my way.
Yeah.
Like, I'm an inbox of like everyone's anger and hate.
Yeah.
It all goes back to me. And I can't even do jokes like you want to go. Hey, I want to see Hamilton, but I'm waiting for an all-white cast. They're like, that's not funny. There's no jokes left for me because when do you when do you get to be like white joke? There's just, you can't. So I just sit there and go, I guess you could. I know. I know. You're right. But like you were sort of Officer and a Gentleman on your special going, I got nowhere else to go. So
you
might as well just come
reference.
Out blazing. Yeah. You know what I mean? Because you had a, not a stigma, but once you leave SNL and the way it was a bumpy exit, then you go,
so
if I'm not going to get a Netflix special right away, and it looks like you might now, because Ted is pretty forgiving about just loving comedy, which luckily, and so he's willing to sort of grade on a curve, you know, on people. So I would think, but you know, so you go to do a lo-fi special and, I like that. And there's some people pulling for you, you know, there's some people going, shit, man, some people get a second chance. Does he, you know,
yes,
yeah.
I think
does he
so.
Deserve it? Like that's the world. Do you deserve it?
Yeah. Well, that's the one of, you know, I don't know. Yeah. That's an unfortunate thing to have. Is like, do I deserve a chance? And other people decide that shit. And it's
yeah.
like, that sucks. That's one of the negative things. Cause you know, when you get like canceled or however you want to fucking say it,
consequences.
People are like, look at him. He's fine. It's It's like, no, I had to overcome shit. Like, this is, it's not easy. And now I got to deal with, I'll never not have scrutiny. It'll always be, remember that thing. And then, you know how that is.
Sure.
But it's also what, you know, I'm always watching for the corporations when they drop. If someone's, the cancel thing starts to happen, and then the corporations, it's like a hot oven. They don't need it. And so they start, and then the agents fire and everyone's let go like that.
Dominoes.
But the public, most of, there's a mass audience that's not as sensitive as this other part of the audience and don't take off-color jokes at face value that's proving something nefarious about the person saying it. So it's a big audience.
It's when it comes to the corporate, I mean, it's just money. Like if Chappelle had said what I said, there'd be no problem. If Louis or anybody had said, just if that was the only thing they ever said bad, it'd be fine. I had nothing behind me. There was no like, oh, this guy's funny. All they had was that clip.
Right.
I guess what I'm trying to say is like, once you get more fans, once you get more all this, if you're worth something, they'll keep you. They don't give a fuck. They don't have morals.
Yeah. Oh, no. Then once it turns, then we always loved him. Then they'll jump. I will predict, and Ted's a friend of ours. If you want it, you can. Well,
Netflix has morals. Netflix is great.
Well, they've kept Chappelle under a lot of firestorms. I think that the more you keep going, you just go the opposite. Like you just come out and do kick-ass specials, and you're just doing great on Rogan, and so then it just. You know, Lauren, that'd be a Lauren thing. You know, things are that seem so will never go away. They just sort of tend to fade over time. And then there's just this other part. There's always going to be people digging something up, but I think it's such a small percentage. I like to make predictions. I predict you will go to 12,000 seaters within 2 years.
Jeez. Don't do that.
I predicted it for Louis when he was on my show.
I say he'll be out of the business, so we'll meet in the middle somewhere.
1997, I said to Louis, you will headline Madison Square Garden 5 nights in a row.
He didn't say that, did you?
He took a swing at me. No, he was my head writer of my show. Always an amazing guy. But he's back out there.
Yeah.
He's a genius.
Oh, wait, I want to ask Shane about, we won't keep you all day, Shane, but what about, so you're obviously, I think you're a fan of Norm McDonald, and then he called you, right?
Yeah.
That's fucking cool.
It was right. It was all in the same like weekend. So it was very surreal. It was like no one knew who I was. And then I'm on the phone with Louie and Norm and all these guys. But yeah, Norm was exactly who I thought he'd be, which was cool. He just, you know, I didn't even get a word in. He just kind of ran. I remember I was walking around in my backyard. And he was going all about like the state of comedy and how everything is. And it was cool. It was cool to, get to talk to him.
Like the other guy that got let go.
Yeah.
And SNL, remember Dana? Why was it? Oh, it was more OJ. I thought he said F-U-C-K word, but.
A lot of OJ stuff.
OJ.
Yeah, OJ's a real nice guy, except like he likes to kill people, you know?
No, you know what? So OJ's not guilty now, Dana. Now who's laughing?
He's got a book out. But yeah, there's only one Norm, and he had a rhythm to him and a way of speaking. It was so unique. I had a couple long phone calls with him, too, that were just fascinating because he goes all over the place.
Yeah.
Yeah, a guy buries $10,000 and wants to leave it to their relatives 100 years later. It's hardly worth anything, right? But the guy bought a house, it'd be worth like $5 million. You know, it's just all the stuff like that.
Whenever I'm with Adam Egan, that's usually what we talk about the whole time.
Norm is.
He's in love with Norm. I always go, that's enough.
I don't know. I'm with him. I think Norm's incredible.
We were on Lights Out, and he was putting together a podcast. Norm, he's always on the phone for 2 hours. I go, let's get your head in the game, guys. Like, it's Norm. I go, woo.
That is how he talks, dude. He is a little bitch. He's such a little bitch.
Well, I don't know.
I knew a guy, Larry Bubbles Brown, that opened for Norm a lot and loved Norm, Larry Bubbles Brown. And he said Norm would just get on a run, and he'd just walk rooms. San Jose Improv, it's like a 400-seater. And he's just working down on some disease or somebody or something. And the guy, and they just slowly start leaving. He just walks a room and he just keeps going. So he was notorious. And also,
what did he say, Dana, about fighting cancer? He goes,
yeah,
the battle,
it's a draw. Yeah.
I see a
you
guy.
Die,
yeah.
And then
yeah.
cancer dies. I'd say that's a draw.
I saw a guy, he said he's putting up a big fight, you know. I saw a guy in bed, you know, just watching television. I didn't see him fighting very much, you know.
Yeah, he was watching Matlock.
Yeah, but yeah, he was a genius.
We're such a weirdo when we're on the road with
two geniuses.
We did Sandler tour the last time, and it was more of us, but when Norm, he wouldn't sleep at night, so we'd go up to the elevator, you know, in the elevator on our floor. And he goes, you want to come in and hang out? And I go, because I'm the biggest pussy of the whole group. I go, Norm, it's midnight. We got to get up and fly. We'll order food. I go, no. And I go, I'm just going to go take a tub and go to bed. He goes, you can take a tub in here and then we'll talk. I go, through the door or you're coming in? He goes, that's up to you.
It's very.
I go, I think I'm just going to go in my room. He goes, your loss. And that's every night. Every night I walk by and we walk up. Are you coming in? I go, Norm, I don't know what's going on. I don't know.
Now, Adam told me a story, and I don't, you know, I don't want to be telling tales out of school here, but
telling tales.
It was you guys were on a plane. I think it was a private jet. And Norm was sitting there.
Oh, no. Yeah. This one.
Do you remember this?
Yes.
You tell me if it's.
No, you tell it and I'll tell you if it's even.
So this is what I think. Now I'm hearing it from Adam. I think you were like standing up and I guess your crotch was like right in Norm's face. So I forget exactly, but he was like, hey, like get your dick out of my face. I'm trying to sleep. And then he was like,
open his mouth.
No, maybe I fucked that up.
He said there was two chairs facing the two in the back of the plane.
Yeah. See? Yeah.
So
you
It's two other, you know, so two or two, and then we all just stand and bullshit. And so I'm leaning against his chair, and he goes, hey, Spade, do you mind not having your dick right next to my fucking mouth while you're talking? And I go, oh, sorry. And I lean back. And then he goes, by the way, if I fall asleep, you better not take that hot, juicy, hard cock and stuff it in my mouth. And then he tilts his head back and closes his eyes and opens his mouth. And everyone stares at him. And then we all laugh. I don't know if I can tell that. That's why I never told that.
We don't know.
That story's incredible.
I know. It's funny. It's funny to us.
Baby boomer fans will.
No, no one's going to be offended by that. That's fucking great.
True Green is the easiest and most affordable way to get a beautiful lawn. Now, you're out there, you have acres and acres, hundreds of acres. All you have to do is water and mow, and they'll do the rest. No. Weed control, which you hate, fertilization, aeration.
Can't stand it.
Among others. They'll do all of that, so you can do literally anything else. Dana's out there like Yellowstone. You have better things to do in your free time. I know you do. You don't want to focus on lawn care.
True Green is too good to be true, is what I'm saying, but it is true. Right, David? Because you're going to have more time to do things that you want to focus on.
All the hard work, and it gets you to a great lawn. That's what you want. You take care of everything else you got to do in your life. You're very busy. Let True Green take care of this one thing. Get it off your plate.
You know what? I do have some space. I want to put some grass down. I'll call you later, True Green.
Talk to True Green. Where can listeners purchase or learn more? You go to TrueGreen.com. You do you. Let True Green do your lawn care. Visit TrueGreen.com to get the best lawn at the best price with the best people, guaranteed.
You can trust True Green to give you the best lawn because they are the official lawn care treatment provider of the PGA Tour.
Whoa.
They offer a satisfaction guaranteed, and they have a verified best price promise, which guarantees you the lowest price with no compromise on quality. That is such a cool thing.
Good job, True Green. You're nailing it.
My dad works in B2B marketing, but I never really knew what that meant. Then one day, my dad came by my school for career day and told everyone in my class he was a big ROAS man. Then he just kept saying things like, the bigger the ROAS, the better, over and over. My friends still laugh at me to this day. I think it means calculating a return on ad spend. One thing's for sure, I'll be known as the ROAS man's kid for the rest of my days. Why couldn't you just be a fireman or a lawyer? Why?
You ruined my life, Dad.
Not everyone gets B2B, but LinkedIn has the people who do. And with ads on LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people based on job title, industry, likelihood to buy, and more. Start converting your B2B audience into high-quality leads today. We'll even give you a $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/wall to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/wall. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be, to be.
Did Norm, when he got into bed at night, did he just giggle for an hour of all the things he said to people all day? Yeah, every guy was faint on the plane there. Yeah, oh, my mouth. He's been his cack, you know? He must have just, because.
It is funny.
He would he was a kind of a, he would be a rabble rouser. I don't know what you would call him, almost a flim flam man. He would just play with you, but I would just start doing an impression back to him, you know? Mm. Hey, just, you knew he was just sort of fucking with you in such a funny way all the time. So funny. Mm. Mm. So you, that's a good influence.
Yeah. For it's Shane. Good to have. Yeah. You like Patrice O'Neill. You like Chappelle. You like, I'm looking at your list. It's all good people.
Bernie Mac, dude. I've been on a real Bernie Mac kick.
Oh, yeah. The Kings going, of, yeah. The one
where
it was Bernie. Who else? But yeah.
Oh, the Kings of Comedy, or is that what it was?
The Kings of Comedy was DL, Cedric, Bernie Mac, and what's his name?
Harvey?
But yeah.
Yes.
It was?
Yeah. And it was so powerhouse that you're like, did Bernie follow Harvey or vice versa?
No, Bernie went last.
Okay, so he followed a lot of
killing.
Crazy over the top killing. And then he brought it up to another level.
He does the milk and cookies bit on that, and I think that's one of the best. It's one of the greatest stand up bits of all time.
Yeah. And just his phrase,
he calls it kindergartner, six-year-old here, homosexual.
Yeah, just, oh, what a voice. I mean, what a voice. Yeah. Just
so quit crying, do some push-ups.
Yes. I like your first joke. Extraordinary. I think on your special, Shane, you start out with like a cold opening of who came up with the age of consent in the old days.
Yeah.
And the guy goes, I'm from Delaware. I say 12. And then everyone goes, whoa. And you go, hey, I don't want to go first. Like, what do you think? 12? Yeah, higher? And then then you sort of fade out. Then you go into people coming into the club. That's a good opening. I like that.
Well,
good.
This is a lot of this is, I mean, all this is McKeever, John McKeever. He's the guy who I do the sketches with. He really directed and set this whole thing up on how to do this. And that joke was it was quick and it was kind of out of place in the special.
Mm-hmm. Perfect place.
So he was just like, here, what if we just directly open with
it? Just shows what it's going to be like, you know?
Yeah,
like,
especially on YouTube. Yeah.
If you don't, you're like, if you don't like this one, you're not going to like the rest. Yeah, yeah. So
but
might as well start here.
It's so-called inappropriate, but then you're quoting a founding father or something. Or so it's like smart and, you know, like, because they had to come up with an age of consent, I guess, or whatever they're trying to figure out.
No, I mean, that also didn't happen until like the 90s. Like, that just happened.
Oh, okay.
Well, then it was zero back then. That was even worse.
There was no rules.
You could marry your 12-year-old cousin in those days. Like,
all right, well,
Abraham
Dana,
Lincoln did.
Anything else for this young man? I had a good time talking to him.
Just what's your headspace these days? Like when we get off the Zoom, are you feeling good? You're gonna go out for ice cream with your girlfriend, or what where are you?
No, I gotta get in a car and drive across the George Washington Bridge.
To go to Pennsylvania, out of New York. Okay. Oh, that's right. I played Parks Casino like a month ago. And before I went out, they go, hey, this is Buck County. This is Trump country.
Bucks County. Yeah, yeah.
So I just took my glasses off, squinted my eyes, and walked around as Biden. And it was like the Beatles had landed. They were just, like, hey, there's people going, and really tight hip flexors, you know, shaking hands with invisible people. It was like a 2-minute pantomime. I mean, conservative crowds are a little easier. I don't know why that is.
Well, I run into this thing where I'm like, I don't know. I get weird about it because I was just in Florida and they were all Trump.
Like, it's too far in a way.
Yeah. The second, like, cause it's fun to do these jokes in New York where everyone gets upset.
Yeah.
Like if you go on stage and say Trump's the man, it's funny. Yeah. in Manhattan, it's funny.
Yeah.
In Florida, they're like, yeah. And
it's they're taking it serious like it's a rally then. Yeah.
Yeah. It's like, fuck, that's not what I want. I want this to be funny.
Yeah. Good Lord. Yeah. Well, so much fun looking at your stuff these last couple days. And you're going to be fine. I don't know. What am I supposed to say?
He already landed on his feet. He's all right. But it's good. We'll look forward to seeing you in person, bud.
Yeah, me too, man. You guys are awesome. I'm a big fan. Thank you so much.
We'll,
took him an hour to say that, Dana, but whatever. It's
you guys are
talking all the time. The compliments we give them.
I probably talked a little
if
too
they're
much.
Real.
I usually have podcast regret, and I go, why did I say that? Why didn't I let Shane finish that sentence?
That's exactly what happens. I do podcasts constantly, and there's not one podcast that I don't have immense anxiety after.
Yeah, even if you're a guest. Like, why did I interrupt him? Why didn't I say that? Why did I? What is that about? So you have it too? I'm glad.
I mean, mine might be
I'm not alone.
Mine might be from getting fucking destroyed for something I said on a podcast.
Hey, wait a minute. I think you got something there. Yeah. I see where you're going. Yeah, that's...
Could be from that time I got publicly crucified. Yeah.
It's part of it. Okay, man. Well, thanks, buddy.
You guys rule. Thank you so much.
This has been a podcast presentation of Cadence 13. Please listen, then rate, review, and follow all episodes. Available now for free wherever you get your podcast.
No joke, folks.
Fly on the Wall has been a presentation of Cadence 13, executive produced by Dana Carvey and David Spade, Chris Corcoran of Cadence 13, and Charlie Finan of Brillstein Entertainment.
The show's lead producer is Greg Holtzman, with production and engineering support from Serena Regan and Chris Basil of Cadence 13.